And you may proceed.
May it please the court and opposing counsel, my name is Sarah Safrick and I'm the attorney for Mr. Montoya. Mr. Montoya is asking this court to find that it was an error for the lower courts to overrule the motions to suppress and motion in limine filed in this case. Mr. Montoya is asking this court to find that there was insufficient evidence to support the driving under the influence conviction. And Mr. Montoya is asking this court to find that the county court imposed an excessive sentence. This case is about how details matter in a driving under the influence investigation. The procedures and rules surrounding a DUI investigation are put in place to ensure that the evidence gathered is reliable and actually what it purports to be. Such evidence should not be admitted if the correct procedures are not followed. For example, we can look at how the horizontal gaze nystagmus test was conducted by the trooper in this case. That evidence was adduced not only at trial, but also at a motion to suppress hearing. The National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration is the training guide used by law enforcement. The trooper in this case testified that he was trained under that manual. He also agreed that that manual directs the trooper to have the subject, before that field sobriety test, stand with their feet so far apart and their hands at their sides.
Did he also receive training that it was okay to have them be seated?
That's what he indicated at the motion to suppress hearing and at the trial. However, it was unclear where that training came from, who gave him that training, and he did testify, I'm gonna call it NHTSA for short, but that NHTSA manual was the guiding principle of what law enforcement is trained under. So we have the NHTSA manual saying to administer the test one way, and then we have the trooper in this case in the cruiser with Mr. Montoya administering the test a different way.
Why would that go to admissibility as opposed to weight?
The defense would argue that it goes to admissibility and that there was no, it goes to the fact that the defense does not believe there was probable cause to make the arrest. And so we have the trooper doing the test in his cruiser. The issue with that is this is a standardized field sobriety test. The purpose of the standardized field sobriety test, as the trooper testified, is these tests should be conducted in the same manner each time to ensure not only reliability but accuracy in the results.
Do we know the effect of conducting the test in the way that the trooper conducted this test? Do we know, is there any impact or effect on it?
We don't know, and that's the issue. The trooper testified at trial that the goal is to conduct them the same way because NHTSA says that certain results are likely to be achieved if all the tests are standardized. So we do not believe those results are any longer reliable.
Do you have any case law you can point us to that shows we're not conducting the horizontal gaze nystagmus would in a standing position would result in it being impermissibly used?
No. Okay. Also, another example. There's a 15-minute wait period before a preliminary breath test is administered. The purpose of that is it is an attempt to ensure that no conduct or an event takes place that could contaminate the breath sample and taint the results. It allows the alcohol that could potentially be in a person's mouth to hopefully dissipate before that preliminary breath test.
What is the officer trained to look for during that 15-minute observation period?
He is trained to look for, he testified, just various things, but one, that people don't regurgitate anything, back up. He's trained to look for if someone is messing, I think, with their mouth, do they have gum, anything that could affect the outcome of the test. And that could be a movement by a person, I guess, as well. In this case, the defense would argue that procedure was not followed, that Mr. Montoya admitted to burping during this 15-minute wait period. The trooper did not start the 15-minute wait period over. I do not believe that Mr. Montoya's mouth was checked. after that wait period. And so the defense would argue that the preliminary breath test result was not reliable.
Did you assign any error with respect to the findings of historical fact made by the trial judge?
During the jury trial, my intention was to renew all the motions to suppress. I admit the dates I said in the trial were for the stop and, the motion to suppress the data master test. I do admit that. The court did state I have standing objections for the motions to suppress.
No, I wasn't asking whether you preserved your motion to suppress. I was asking, with respect to the ruling on the motion to suppress, did you assign any error to the findings of historical fact made by the trial judge?
No.
So you're not quarreling with the facts. It's the legal interpretation.
Yes.
That your claim is limited to.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So is your legal interpretation that every time someone burps, the 15 minutes has to start over?
The argument is an action should be taken. The trooper is accusing this man of being so impaired by alcohol that he cannot drive. And the trooper's testimony is, well, I relied on his word that he didn't burp anything up. Well, no. Something should be taken by the law enforcement officer that is responsible for conducting this investigation. Now, I think it could be one of two things. It could be restarting the 15-minute wait period over, or as soon as that action happens, it can be checking the person's mouth. I think there's two things that could have happened. Third, the data master results should not have been admitted into evidence and cannot be trusted. And that is due, I know this court has heard this issue before, but that is due to what I'm gonna call the simulator solution issue. I understand the ruling in Crana-Witter. However, the defense argues that there was not sufficient foundation laid to show that the amended certificates of analysis were reliable or what they or contained what they purported to said they contained.
How is this case any different than Crana-Witter? How you have to distinguish Crana-Witter and what's your argument to do so?
The argument is that case was a motion for a new trial. There was evidence put on after the fact of the trial. This case, the procedural posture of this case was motion to suppress / motion in limine was filed. There was a separate hearing before the trial, and then the objection was renewed at trial.
Do you think then in Crana-Witter there may have been a waiver of this problem?
Potentially. Yes, potentially.
Whereas you brought the to the court's attention in your motion to suppress,
yes,
regarding the absence of the signature.
Yes, yes. And the purpose of the certificate of analysis is to establish authenticity and reliability of the solution. Who is Alma Palmer? Who is Colby Hale? What training do these people have? Where did they go to school? That is nowhere in the record because Officer Powell testified that he simply has not talked to these people. No one in the Lincoln Police Department has talked to these people. And remember, Ms. Palmer testified that she was the person who prepared, tested the simulator solutions. In fact, that was a lie. The defense would argue
testified or signed a piece of paper.
Signed a piece of paper, yes. So the defense would argue that the certificate of analysis, the reliability, the accuracy of those are questionable.
And when were you given that information? I'll call it discovery. When did you get that information?
The defense would have gotten the discovery, the initial discovery, fairly quickly after the case was assigned. However, the certificate of analysis would have been around the time, I can't give an exact date, but around the time the motion to suppress was filed, I believe, after it was researched.
After this was discovered, Did the state have the similar solutions independently tested as well?
I don't know. Now, as far as the record, I don't believe that was in the record. May I be excused to sit down?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the time. So if your time is up, if we have no other questions.
I have one more question. Yes. before you sit down. Has Mr. Montoya served his 180-day jail sentence?
No.
Okay, thank you.
He is in custody on an unrelated case, but he has not served that portion of the sentence.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Lewis, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, may it please the court. Matt Lewis, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the state of Nebraska. This is a direct appeal of appellant's conviction of driving under the influence, third offense, a misdemeanor violation after a jury trial in Lancaster County Court, a decision that was affirmed on appeal by the District Court of Lancaster County. I'll just move chronologically through the motions to suppress. October 31st, 2017 motion to suppress the initial stop itself. The state contends that Trooper Thorson had probable cause to stop Montoya given the traffic violations that he observed Montoya commit. As this court has said, a traffic violation, no matter how minor, creates probable cause to stop the driver of a vehicle. At the motion to suppress hearing, the county court heard testimony from the arresting officer that specified the reasoning for stopping Montoya after seeing him commit two traffic violations, specifically speeding, and then also failing to maintain his lane once he started following Montoya and his police cruiser.
Did the trooper follow the correct procedure to determine the speed of the vehicle?
He testified at the hearing, his training and experience estimating the speed of vehicles. He said that he was traveling about the speed limit when he saw Montoya pull out onto the street. He said that he was doing about 35 miles an hour, which is the speed limit, but saw Montoya pulling away from him. At that point, having estimated that he was traveling faster than the speed limit, which he was traveling, he activated his radar gun. And the radar gun clocked him at 50 in a 35 mile an hour zone, which is 15 miles an hour in excess of the speed limit. So I would say yes.
Did he estimate the speed of that vehicle, or did he just know it was going faster than?
He didn't estimate in an exact speed. He didn't put an estimated speed in his report. I don't think he testified as to how fast he thought he was going. He just thought that he was traveling in excess of the speed limit based on the speed that he was going in his police cruiser at the time.
Is there a different standard for proving up a violation of speeding as opposed to using a speeding violation as reasonable suspicion for another crime?
Not that I'm aware of. These traffic violations alone create the probable cause to stop Montoya, whether or not a citation was issued or not. He argues that the radar device may have been malfunctioning and that the turn in the road was not easily navigable. However, the evidence and testimony provided by the state at that hearing gave specific and articulable facts to support the stop based on those traffic violations. The trooper stated that the speed registered on the radar device did not seem out of the ordinary or lead him to believe that it was reading an error. And the video shows that the conditions on the road at the time were clear. The road was free of obstructions, it was dry, and the curve was easily navigated by the trooper's police vehicle when it entered into the same curve behind Montoya's vehicle a few seconds later. As a result, the state submits that the district court was not in error in affirming the district or the county court. If there are no questions on that assignment, I will move to the next one. The next motion to suppress was the probable cause to arrest following the stop. This was the December 22nd, 2017 motion. The state contends that Trooper Thorson had probable cause to arrest Montoya following the stop for the traffic violations due to his suspicions that Montoya was driving under the influence, which was confirmed by the test performed on Montoya by Trooper Thorson after Montoya was stopped.
Is it state's position that assignment of error, if you will, has been preserved for our consideration?
I don't think that I make the argument in the state's brief that the issue has been waived. I know the district court said that it had been waived. The state addressed it, just out of being a good sport but decided to address it since the district court, gave it its full due.
So what's your position here?
I would say that he has probable cause to stop. I'm not going to, try to knock the waiver issue over their head or anything. So I would say that there was probable cause to stop. I'm not
Can the state waive an issue that's not been preserved for appellate review?
I'm not sure about that. I'd say that's what I'm attempting to do, so I'd be willing to be told otherwise, I guess, in the opinion. But yeah, I did not address the waiver issue in the state's brief, so I would submit that, I guess. Upon approach, Trooper Thorson smelled alcohol coming from Montoya's car. He separated him from the passengers in the vehicle and determined that the smell was present specifically on Montoya. Montoya also confirmed to the officer that he'd been drinking that evening with his last drink at 1:45 a.m. He was stopped at 1:52 a.m., so less than 10 minutes later. He said that he had several tall beers at the bar that night. He said he started drinking, I think, sometime around like 11:45. Trooper Thorson asked Montoya to submit to the standard test used to indicate potential alcohol impairment, specifically the horizontal gaze nystagmus test, the HGN, and the vertical gaze nystagmus test, both of which Trooper Thorson is trained to administer, in which Montoya failed. I think on the HGN he failed all six markers. This is the test that the defense is saying that there is a problem with how it was administered. The state would just point to the decision by this court in State versus Prescott that the holding that while the test in the manual provides standards for performance and ideal conditions, less than ideal conditions will still yield valid indicators of impairment. Moving forward to the walk and turn test, the other standardized field sobriety test, Montoya also failed the walk and turn test and declined to do the standing leg test. On the walk and turn, he failed 5 out of 8 markers. Afterwards, Thorson recorded a 0.176 PBT from Montoya, further confirming his impaired state. He recorded a 15-minute observation. I think he also testifies that he checked for interferences in Montoya's mouth prior to doing the PBT. As a result, the state contends that Thorson established support for the prudent belief that Montoya had driven under the influence and thus had probable cause to arrest him without a warrant. Finding of the same by the district court was not an error, given those factors that had been witnessed by Trooper Thorson during the stop.
What's the effect of Mr. Montoya belching during that 15-minute observation period?
I believe that Trooper Thorson testifies during the suppression hearing that he asked him if he had burped or regurgitated stomach fluid during the course of that burp, and Mr. Montoya said that he did not. I believe Trooper Thorson took him at his word for that and didn't check his mouth, but I would say that the law enforcement officer isn't a doctor necessarily. I don't know what he would be looking for in his mouth, even if he did get him to look in his mouth. I mean, clearly on the video, I don't think it shows that he is throwing up or anything like that that would seem to affect the result.
How did the existence or non-existence of burping get into the record?
How did the existence or non-existence of burping get into the record? I believe that it is asked by the defense during the course of the hearing is my recollection, but I could be wrong.
On the motion to suppress?
Yes, ma'am. There are no further questions on the probable cause to arrest. I'll turn next to the June 28th, 2018 motion to suppress. This is the simulator solution issue. Montoya argues that the certificates certifying the alcohol content of the simulator solutions test batches used to test the accuracy of the Datamaster breathalyzer machine have the wrong names affixed, and he alleges that that proves a fatal violation of Title 177, which requires those certificates. He argues that the amended certificates did not cure this issue, and as a result, he believes that the 0.134 BAC reading should have been suppressed. That was the eventual BAC that was recorded on the Datamaster once he was down at the station.
So the state's position on that is this your understanding of the facts that the certificate is missing the correct name in the first instance?
Yes, it is signed by the wrong person.
Okay, and thereafter we have some more facts, and we're assessing the legal significance of that.
Correct.
Is that an administrative mistake? Is it a legal consequence?
I don't believe that it is necessarily of legal consequence given the factors here. This was not a violation. I mean, the law enforcement officers at the time did not know that the name was incorrect on the certificates. And then once they determine that the name is incorrect on the certificates, they go through significant steps to understand that the simulator solutions that are used to test the Datamaster are correct.
Are the rulings, forgive me if I have the wrong case, but in Melendez-Diaz, is that relevant?
I don't think that Melendez-Diaz is relevant. In that case, the defense asserted that the substance found in the petitioner's possession was cocaine of a certain weight. The precise testimony that the analyst would be able to be expected to provide if they were called to trial, where in this case you have, and this is kind of a 6 degrees of separation sort of thing, but you have people that are certifying the simulator solution to certify the machine that certifies the breath test that is coming from Mr. Montoya at the time. So I on that point, you know, I would point a little bit to, and this gets to the hearsay and the confrontation issue that is seen in State versus Crano-Witter, that there is no testimonial portion of that certificate. It is purely, you know, administrative.
We're pretty far removed from whether or not the machine works.
Yes.
Right? It's just
yes.
Whether or not it's got the right ribbons and seals.
Right.
What steps did the state take to ensure that the simulator solution was reported to be?
So the company that is responsible for the simulator solution, Repco, and I don't know if it was the state that submitted it for alternative analysis. I believe it was Repco that did it. They hired a third-party firm in order to determine that the simulator solutions were what they said that they were in the original certificates, as well as the amended certificates with the correct name affixed to it. The state provided at the motion to suppress hearing the results of those tests. It also presented the results of all the other data masters, showing that they were accurate at the time. They took pretty significant measures to ensure that the simulator solutions were exactly what they were supposed to be.
Was that all presented during trial?
I'm not sure if all that was presented during trial. I know that that was presented during the motion to suppress hearing.
Is there anything in Title 177 which prohibits the filing of amended certificates?
Not that I'm aware of, not amended certificates, no. Thus, the district court also correctly found that Montoya's motion to suppress on this point was correctly overruled. As for his other assignments of error, given the time, I would just point to the sufficiency of the evidence claims, the state's brief underlying all those claims, since it is sort of cumulative, and then also that the sentence ordered of Mr. Montoya was not an abuse of discretion. The state submits the district court did not err in general and asks for this court to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. So that actually concludes our argument.